I'm your average action movie survivor. When I'm not busy trying to avoid massive superhero battles with people getting thrown through walls or dodging giant robots about to step on me, I'm listening to the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also, be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Do it now, because the Robopocalypse is coming!
Part-Time Fanboy.
Hello, Emily.
Hi, Jay.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah. Good to hear yours, my old friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. The last time, well, I don't know if it was the last time you chatted, but on this podcast, it was pretty in pink and some kind of wonderful, right?
That's right. It was. And I feel like today is going to be at least as controversial.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
At least more so.
More than likely. But we promised to approach this subject in the spirit of lovely Amazon sisterhood and understanding as we can.
Do we?
At least I'll try. Let me introduce us all. This is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. I don't know why I'm giggling when I say that. I'm anticipating peals of giggle or laughter or who knows anger. My name is Christian Horn, and on the podcast we have special guests returning. We have Jay Holtham on the line.
Hello.
We have Reina Velarde on the line. We have Paul Edwards on the line. And hello. I'm going to try and get the last name right, Emily, because I'm so used to your maiden name in my brain. we have Emily Convert on the line. Did I get it right?
Perfect.
Nice. Yay. Nailed it. Emily was with us on the Some Kind of Wonderful. I put Some Kind of Wonderful first because I like that movie better, but Pretty in Pink podcast that we had several months ago, and we were discussing it a little bit via Messenger, and I said, Emily, why don't you come back on the podcast so you can join into the Wonder Woman 1984 chat, and here we are. That is what we are here to discuss, Wonder Woman 1984. I kind of told Emily it's a rainy day in LA. Emily and I were chatting a little bit before everyone else got on the line. And for some reason, I seem to have woken up on the wrong side of the bed this morning. So I'm going to try to be nice. I'm a little cranky pants.
Oh, boy.
But let's.
It's okay if you're cranky, because I feel like we're going to agree today.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like this is only going to go badly for me. So.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, this is, approaching this subject, and watching the movie is absolutely the opposite sort of reaction that I expected to have. I was anticipating this in a positive light. I was expecting good things out of it. I was actually very excited. The whole family was very excited. My wife fell asleep in the first, like, probably 20 minutes of it. And my daughter and I, we were watching. And it's funny because a message or two popped in from her friends on her phone before we started watching. And they were like, yeah, it's not good. It's not good. And we were like, I was like, okay, well, these are kids. They're like 13-year-old kids. You know, maybe it'll be all right. And we started watching and... And at first I was like, okay, like, you know, okay, maybe I'll. And as it just sort of went on and on and on, I was like, oh, the kids are right. I was like, the kids are right. Like, it's really not good. And my kid actually agreed with me. So I was like, oh, something's not wrong with me. Maybe. But, you know, I'm not going to try and take over the podcast with negativity. I, like I said, I want to approach it maybe maybe with a more positive light. Who would like to begin on the Wonder Woman 1984? I mean, first of all, I love the first movie. So, I mean, I really enjoyed the first movie so much so that that I actually took my daughter, and I thought that some World War One scenes might have been a little too intense for her at her age, like maybe what, like 3 years ago? So much so that I took her to see it in the theater. Like, I was like, no, you need to see this. Like, this is good. Like, I want to. So watching this movie, again, I think maybe in my brain, because I liked the first one so much and saw it as kind of maybe a little bit step forward for female superheroes in cinema, you know, I was like very excited to see this one. And maybe that's the bigger letdown for me. But anyway, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was like the last one was so good that it was like, all right, we're watching the second one. It's going to be, this is going to be epic. It's going to be amazing. And then I saw one of our friends, she's a reviewer, and I saw her say something negative about it. I'm like, don't read the whole thing she posted, because I don't want to be, you know, tainted. But like, I could see it was negative. And then I saw your post and I was like, no, no, people are not liking it. And then somebody said something good. And I was like, okay, okay, we're back on the fence. We're kind of even. Yeah. I can go into this kind of like, all right, some people like it. And I went into it with that mind frame, same thing. Like, all right, I want to like this, but I found myself analyzing. I think you said this before, where like, if you find yourself on your phone, you know, like that's a good kind of litmus test to whether you like it or not. And I found myself, if I find myself analyzing it too much and thinking about it and trying to figure out like, what parts of this do I like? What do I not like? Then I'm like, all right, I'm not really liking this movie because I'm criticizing it too much. And I wanted to love it. The whole that beginning scene was cool, but like had no payoff later. I like Kristen Wiig. I was surprised that Kristen Wiig was in it. I didn't know she was casted as Barbara Minerva.
Oh, really? And
as always, spoilers coming. So if you didn't watch
Then, spoilers, obviously. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I didn't know she was in it. And so when I'm watching her, I'm like, okay, cool. She's going to be in a superhero movie. I didn't feel like I was watching a superhero movie.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Kristen Wiig did a good job, but I feel like she didn't match everything else going on around her.
Oh, not just Kristen Wiig. I felt like a whole bunch of other people were in different movies and didn't know what was going on in the other movies.
Agreed.
I was talking with a friend, and we sort of figured out that it's kind of like a Wishmaster movie.
Okay.
You know?
Yep.
I guess I wasn't really prepared for, I mean, look, 1984, I was excited to see the 80s again, because I was like, oh man, they're gonna have fun with like the superhero tropes of the 80s. Mm-hmm. They're gonna like, you know, we're gonna get some fun. And it was a really cool montage for a little bit. And then it felt like they forgot that they were a period piece for a long time. And how did the 4th of July just sort of sneak up on Washington, D.C.?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope, that's fair.
Yeah, there were just moments that, like, I remember the first moment in the movie where I was like, uh-oh. And it was the moment with the cab at the beginning of the movie. There's a scene where she's trying to get a cab and somebody else gets the cab instead of her, and they have this little conversation. No, you go ahead.
I didn't see you there. Yeah.
And that scene does not pay off anything.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like, we're going to have a 1 minute scene here with Wonder Woman haggling over a cat.
Like, my only explanation for that is just like that you could see that she's a little more apathetic than she has been. But you're right. Overall, you're right.
You're right. If Steve were alive, she would have taken that cat.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Holy cow. Wait, Emily, I want to hear some of your thoughts, too, before we get to Jay.
Oh, you know, I don't know that I didn't even see the first movie until this weekend. So
I had
to do my homework. Yeah, I watched the first film and then I watched the second film. So I watched them back to back.
Oh, okay.
And maybe I'm totally on the opposite side from you guys here, but I didn't think that the first movie script was any good.
Oh, really?
So yeah, like I really had a problem. Like maybe I'm spoiled because of the Marvel universe and how good the origin stories are there.
Yeah.
But I wanted something more to sink my teeth into with this character. And I felt really kind of frustrated with the fact that you know, her aunt dives in front of her on the beach and takes the bullet in the first film. And then there's no more mention of her. There's no funeral. There's no tears shed. They're just next, you know, cut to them in a boat heading to London. It was just so weird to me. Like, they're just, I feel like there was, and the same with this script. It's like, as the New York Times review put it, it's just janky. Like, there's just no, there, I can't sink my teeth into anything. And it was so disjointed to me from beginning to end. And I feel like they needed to hire a couple of better writers to help them out. That's what
or
it felt
take
like.
Some writers out, in my opinion.
Yeah, right.
I feel like there were too many writers. It's interesting your point about the first movie, because I mean, I definitely had issues with some of the first movie, but I also felt like there was enough good in it, and maybe we'd been exposed to so many bad sort of like DC cinema, like as comic book fans, that we were just like, oh my God, this is so great. Like, it's not absolutely a betrayal of the original character, you know? Like, when I saw Man of Steel, you know, the Superman movie in the theater, there was definitely, and I said this on our previous podcast of, you know, the first Wonder Woman movie where I had, you know, all female guests because I wanted their opinion. And Raina was on that podcast too, I remember. But I remember that there's a certain thing that happens in comic fans' minds when they go see something in the movie theater. And Man of Steel, there was very much bargaining going on. Like, oh, maybe I can deal with this. Maybe this isn't bad. Like, maybe Superman leaving his dad to die in a tornado, maybe I can balance that. And then as the movie goes on, you sort of can't, as your love of the character and what it stands for, you know. And in the original Wonder Woman, I didn't get a sense of any huge betrayal of what the original character stood for. So maybe that's, you know what I'm saying? But you're right. There were weaknesses in that first script. But let's get to Jay, too, because I don't want to leave him out.
I mean, to start with, I'm with Emily. Like, the No Man sequence in the first one is great.
Yeah.
Gal Gadot is great. Chris Pine is great. I think the movie is terrible. Actually, I think the first movie is not very good and doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we all, not all of us, but like there's a lot of chatter about that last act of the first movie where I think they just massively whiff on making a bold choice in favor of a bunch of CGI nonsense. Uh-huh. So I'm actually not particularly a fan of the first movie. This one, though, I found it a delight.
Wow.
Almost immediately. Okay. And loved it, enjoyed every minute of it. You know, like, I kind of took it in the spirit in which I felt like it was made, which was, and I think some of the spirit hurts it in the long run and in sort of a global way and was not the right choice. But I think they were just like, we're going to make an 80s Wonder Woman movie. And it's an 80s Wonder Woman movie. Like, I think if we really remember the movies, the superhero movies and the action movies, the things that we loved of the 80s, they didn't make a lot of sense. They were wildly uneven in tone, but the sort of spirit carried it forward. And for me, the spirit carried it forward. Once we got to that mall sequence, which I thought was a lot of fun and just sort of bright and optimistic, and it reminded me, and intentionally, I think they were trying to be like Superman 2 and have that sort of like spirit to it, I went with it. And I was just like, I'm just going to go with this, and this is going to be fun. And I was like, this was fun. I enjoyed it. Again, I enjoyed Gal Gadot. I enjoyed Chris Pine. I really like Kristen Wiig. Pedro Pascal as Maxwell Lord is definitely in a different movie, but in a fun movie. So I didn't mind it when he was doing his crazy Wishmaster thing. No, it does not make a lick of sense. But I was like, I saw a tweet over the weekend, and I really do think it's true that, like, since we haven't had a superhero movie in like a year, I think we all forgot what they were like.
No, I saw that tweet. And I kind of disagree. I mean, I feel like I understand what you're saying about like 80s superhero movies and Wonder Woman being set in the 80s, but I those movies are bad, man. And like everyone sort of has come to the, and while I don't agree with this, like Superman 2, Superman 3, I've seen people online, you know, all of a sudden defending Superman 3, and I'm like, really? Like, no, that's the really bad. Good. That's the beginning of but the end fun. For the Christopher Reeve movies. Like,
but
like,
it's fun. Superman 3 was fun.
It is, but it's not good. Like, and it's no. just because there's fun. Like, there's fun little elements in it. And then, you know, the thing is like in recent years, it's been really fun to like just tear apart the Richard Lester parts of Superman 2, you know, and the Richard Donner cut. And it's Richard mm-hmm. Lester, right? Is it or did I get that name wrong? I'm not sure.
Richard
but
Lester.
His last name is Lester. I know that. Yeah. But I know that, you know, in recent, you know, with the Richard Donner cut coming out, which, yep. you know, I'm not crazy about that either. You know, with Superman 2, I just, there's things about Superman 2 that I really like, and then there's things that I really despise. But as a whole, I do like Superman 2. But once you start sticking Superman 3 into that defense, I'm like, you lost me, man. Like it's not there. And there's a lot of people that like Superman 2 more than they like the original Superman. They're like, that's better than, and I wholeheartedly disagree with them because I feel like Superman 1 is, as much as you could get at that point, a much more sort of like adult oriented script, mature script in a way. But yeah, I understand your defense of it and I'm glad that you enjoyed it, but I feel like this movie's just a hot mess. Like I it's just like all over the place. And if it had been like maybe 45 minutes too shorter, I probably would have agreed with you, Jay, but I think like when I pulled it up on HBO Max and I saw that it was 2.5 hours, I was like, oh boy, I knew I was like in sort of kind of trouble. Like, I understand why they need to do that with the Avengers movies, maybe because there's so many characters and stuff. And even Endgame, I have like serious issues with, like, you know, in particular, one of my criticisms of the more recent Marvel movies is that they are drifting towards Superman 3, flaming penguins in the background, toys, you know, people bumping into each other, slapstick. And that's not the direction I want to see them go. So I get that. But I just feel like there's so many things in this movie that I was just like, this is going on too long. This is going on too long. Why are we dragging this out? Like, there's fun bits in it, but as a whole, you know, the movie as a whole, I'm just like, yeah, I'm not buying it. Like, I got bored with it and I got really impatient with it. And I got like really, and in parts, like sort of like really offended by it, you know, in a way.
Yeah, no.
And
I have to say, I would probably have much stronger feelings on this movie if I were Arabic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that was an odd choice. I was just like, because, you know, in the 80s, I feel like we sort of were obsessed with the Middle East and depicting, you know, the other and, you know, and things like, it's like, that was a really odd choice for them to go to in their 80s nostalgia, you know, flashback. I know that they were trying to make the threat global, you know, but it just, it felt like I felt like they wanted to make it more multicultural and they wanted to add more, but by doing so, they sort of went with a lot of easy stereotypes. And that was an unfortunate trip into the 80s.
Yeah, but,
because I could definitely imagine those scenes in a 1980s action movie. You're absolutely totally right about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I firmly agree with that. I mean, I think there's a lot of it that, you know, I know a lot of people complain. There are three writers credited?
At least. Yeah.
I think there are only three. I think there are only the three writer. Well, there's like, yeah, whatever.
There's Jeff Johns, there's Patty Jenkins, and then there's somebody else who I can't remember.
And there's someone else, and there may be other people with the story. But I do think that it just is clearly, in a lot of ways, mired in a slightly out-of-date sensibility in a way that, like, I think there's another thing that I enjoy about it. One thing that why I give it a little bit credit, I think everyone's heart was in the right place.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's just that they are like 15 years out of step with the way conversations go now.
Yeah. You know, which is odd because it's a Wonder Woman movie and the first movie was much better at that. And it was set in World War One.
it was not much better about that. The first movie is just as bad, particularly on gender politics.
Okay.
Like the first movie, like not to like throw on that hat, but the first movie feeds into all sorts of like terrible Born Yesterday tropes, all sorts of like, yeah, it's not really that good about that. Like for all of the sort of feminists, it's good in some ways, just like this movie, it's good in some ways. Mm. It's really, really bad in others. Like just the dynamic of Wonder Woman grabs a harasser and tosses him, and that's okay. But Barbara's big turn to evil is she tosses a harasser into a truck.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to be like, oh, she's gone too far now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So like, yeah.
All of that kind of thinking is like, oh, right.
Well, I think that scene is Wonder Woman just tosses him into and Barbara just keeps pounding on him and doesn't let him go until he's dead. So there is difference there. Yeah.
Does she?
Yeah, it's a bit more intense. When we were watching it was like, whoa, slow down. You threw him away. He's done. Yeah. Like, you know.
But even still.
Yeah, you're right.
Like we missed some big parts in Barbara's character development. Yeah.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, she starts off, I felt like she was like sort of flirting in an odd way with her in the beginning and then like suddenly they're friends and then it just like the shifts in the character dynamics in this movie just were so abrupt and odd for me that
did she remind anybody else about like Catwoman's transition, like Michelle Pfeiffer?
Sure.
And also the Riddler in whatever, Batman Forever,
It's the stereotypical shy nerd coming out of their shell, right? There's nothing new about this character, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I meet the beautiful protagonist, and I want to be just like them. And in the end, that's what I wish for, and I get it, and it turns out to be, I can't handle it, you know what I mean? Right. And it's so lame.
Yeah, but I think if Diana was mean to her in any sense, like, feel like Paul's right, like, there was no reason for her to take that hard left, like, she was just like...
Well, but they kind of explain that, right?
Yeah, no, it was the fear of losing everything.
Yeah.
The fear of her undoing all the wishes and going back to her, you know, mousy self.
Yeah.
That was her
I mean, the reason why she went was against Diana in the first place. That's what I'm talking about. Like, Diana was nice to her. She wasn't ever, like, super mean to her, right? Like, to make her be like, I want to fight you and fuck you, right?
Yeah.
It
was, I see what you're saying, that the catalyst for her to be super against her was the conflict.
Because she's going to go after Max Lord, and she's basically sharing that we've got to renounce all the wishes, and that's when she makes the turn, which is like, oh my gosh. And then she becomes even more cruel because the empathy that she had as a nerd, you know, doesn't attribute to strong, powerful people. So, yeah, I don't know. It's very much like a stereotype trope. I don't know what the proper terminology is, but it's very much that, like, hi, I'm shy, and then I come into power, and it's like, you know, and it's just all been done before, and I feel like, and there is a part of me, I know you all like Kristen Wiig. I wasn't a big fan of her in this because I felt that the nerdy shell thing is very much typecasting for her, and then it comes out. I when she made that dramatic turn for me, it wasn't strong enough, or I just didn't buy her in it. But I totally understand what you're saying, Jay. And the assault thing, like, we can get into what people are talking about, and the realization that I had when I was falling asleep the other night, where I was like, because somebody brought that up to me, our friend Evis, who wasn't able to join us on the podcast. And I was like, oh, I didn't see that. And then the next night I was falling asleep, and you know how you have those thoughts that sort of like drift in. I don't know why, but whatever, we could talk about that later. But for me, like the one of the more interesting things about this movie is, why did they set it in 1984? I appreciate, Jay, what you're saying about like that it's the movie sort of is embracing aesthetics of 80s action movies. But for me, it's like by the end of the movie and looking at Maxwell Lord's character and looking at where our president sort of became famous, I feel like very much of this is a comment on, or was supposed to be a commentary on the greed is good culture of the 80s. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, this movie never really nails that on the head. And the one character that I feel is like the biggest waste in this movie is Steve Trevor, because I feel like they use him a lot for comedic, and that's fine, and that's great and everything. But, you know, the thing that I was talking about with my family the other morning, and obviously, unfortunately, my family has to get subjected to my nerd, you know, ramblings every once in a while and, you know, roll their eyes and be like, oh, boy, here goes dad again, or here goes my husband again. You know, I sympathize with them, but I am a part of the family. You know, the biggest failure to me, one of the biggest failures to this movie is that they are obviously by the end of the movie trying to make a commentary on the greed is good culture, like of the 80s, that, you know, more is more. And I mean, Maxwell Lord even says it at the end where he's like, I want more, or there's never enough, or I forget exactly what the line is.
And so many things.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's not even as astute as Michael Douglas was in you know, Wall Street. You know, and Steve Trevor for me. And again, this is the Wonder Woman movie, which is another thing, another big criticism that I have, is that it is not Wonder Woman's story. It is the Maxwell Lord, Barbara Minerva story. This is not a Wonder Woman movie to me, except for when a big action sequence is required. The biggest failure of character use in this movie is Steve Trevor, who is a character from World War One, but circa what, 1918, you know, 17, whatever, a point in history where humanity is just like blowing itself up to bits and people are going without in a big way. It's not the depression necessarily, but it is a thing. And he shows up and the biggest thing he's fascinated by is parachute pants. And he never turns around and goes like, you guys have so much. Like, there is so much. Like, society right now, particularly even in our time during a pandemic, obviously, maybe some of us have been shielded by a lot of the repercussions of it, been fortunate enough. But even in a pandemic right now, there's so many people that have so much. And in the 80s, I really feel like Steve Trevor could have been a character to turn around and be like, particularly make that statement right now when we need it the most. And be like, you guys, like, what are you doing? Like, and in a way, it's done in a comedic effect, but they never use him to hit the nail on the head. And I was just like waiting for that moment for him to be like, oh my God, like, you guys have television? Like, what is this? Like, you guys can communicate? Yeah. Like I needed that character. And maybe it's just me. I just really wanted that character to be the thing in this movie, because I feel like that beyond the trappings of 80s movies, I feel like that they were trying to make a comment about, you know, 80s greed culture, and in particular, probably our greed culture today. And they never do. And I was just like waiting for it.
The problem is, too, is that this movie came out after we've been through a lot of this pandemic.
Yeah.
And the end of this movie, like... The end of this movie requires a suspension of disbelief beyond, you know, the idea that all of these people would like give up what they wished for when like they won't even put on a fucking mask. On I honestly, it's really sad, but the pandemic has like sort of like killed a lot of things in soup, because superheroes are all about, you know, like, encouraging the good in people, and you know, like, we're worth it, you know, humanity's worth it, the world's a place worth fighting for, and you know, when you see the behavior of how people are, and you're just kind of like, know, it's
exactly, watching that scene is like, oh, I'm sorry, and they all just gave up their wishes.
Okay
Well, I had that's a huge suspension.
I had that is a big
far easier time believing the invisible jet over
exactly.
that.
Yeah. Yeah, but even
I did this with a cup once. Now I'm gonna do a whole airplane.
Yeah. But even before the pandemic, though, we were definitely being faced with a part of our society, particularly American society, that was just like, you know, believing in conspiracies or all in with a president who just didn't care about kids in cages and stuff like that. And superhero stories, at their best, even the ones that are like Batman and the Punisher, like, are there to show us like there's a better way. Like, there is a way for us to sort of like come together. And I feel like Wonder Woman reaches for that, but Wonder Woman 84 reaches for that, but in the most clumsy, like overwrought, you know, hanging on each moment for way too long kind of way. And it's the sort of thing that, you know, like something like the Winter Soldier or Captain America in the Marvel movies has done really well for most of his, you know, life. And I just feel like Steve Trevor, Wonder Woman, like I feel like there's a part of me that really feels like that's why it was set in the 80s. Like we were going to make a commentary on all this and maybe there were one too many writers. Maybe there was studio interference. Maybe I don't know what, but like, I feel like superheroes, particularly Wonder Woman, Superman, you know, Captain America, like those sorts of characters are the ones that are supposed to turn the lens on us and be like, hey man, you know, I get that the world is a shitty place. I get that everyone treats everyone like crap. I get that people don't want to wear a mask. But deep down inside, like part of the reason those people aren't wearing masks is there's a fear there, right? Like, and you got to get past that fear and you got to rise towards the occasion, right? And rising towards the occasion isn't storming the Oregon Capitol with your AK-47 because you're a military cosplayer on the weekend. You know, it's empathy and reaching out to people. And I feel like that Steve Trevor and it could have been that linchpin, right? And instead he becomes a representation of something much more sinister, you know, when you really look at the movie, which I don't even know if I want to approach this subject, but I should let other people speak.
Well, when you were talking about the fear, like people need to like see the fear to get garner empathy. I think that one of the like writing directions that could have been changed was for people to actually see the repercussions of their wish, right?
Sure.
Like, nobody, that doesn't really happen for anybody except for Diana and Maxwell Lord, right? A little bit, but he gets his, you know, wishes. Mm-hmm. But I really feel like people needed to see like, oh shit, I got this wish, but this other bad thing that is happening to me. Mm. And then that would have pushed over the persuasion like, okay, now I believe that people will renounce their wish because this other shitty thing is happening to them.
And that's the monkey's paw.
I think they tried that. I think that is, I feel like that is in, like, honestly, Christian, I think you've described what they were going for.
Yeah.
You know, these kind of things are execution dependent because, you know, there's that whole sequence. And this is where, again, this is where I feel like there is a very 80s/90s sensibility that is just baked into the storytelling that undercuts them. Because I feel like there's a sequence in England where the Irish guy and the English woman make their like terrible wishes and she wishes that someone wrap them all up and he wishes that she was dead and she drops dead. I feel like they were going for that, but it sort of got lost in kind of the noise and the churn and the sort of reductivist, like, global politics of it all, that like you're supposed to feel that, but it just is sort of messy.
And
I buy that it is messy. I think I honestly, like, you know, as much as I sort of enjoy it, it is a messy movie that doesn't make any sense. Like, even when you were talking about, someone pointed out, you know, Steve's wonder at various things, they're like, you know what, they had fireworks and escalators and subways in 1911.
Yeah.
It's not the first time he's seen any of these things. Yeah. And I feel like they were trying for that sort of baby
parachute pants
with him. Or parachute pants, whatever. Like all of that with him. But I feel like it did get sort of mired in a kind of just retrograde thinking that it can be just really invisible to people. I feel like, you know, like even they're like, you know, they're sort of super simplistic. The Middle East is all about people who want land that's supposed to be theirs.
Yeah.
But then when they get it, it's complicated and they should just learn to share is a great sort of sentiment.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to actually do with like the actual geopolitical problems of the Middle East. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jay is a side note.
It was so bad, the script. It was just bad. The dialogue was, it made me cringe every time. Even when Steve was talking about how he woke up, I just woke up in the bed. I'm in this guy's apartment. Look at his stuff. Look at his apartment. Like, it was so uncomfortable. It was horrible. And then at the end, when Diana's giving her monologue, when she's lying in pain, leaning up against a wall with her legs splayed on the floor like a doll.
Yeah.
And she's giving really weird monologue at the end that made almost no sense at all. That was somehow her voice convinced the world to give up their wishes. And nobody, I mean, I didn't even know what the hell she was talking about.
Yeah. And this is also where I think Paul and I were talking about, like, that opening sequence was really cool, but that's another, like, there's no payback for that, right? So, like, if they would have either spliced up that sequence to be flashbacks throughout the whole movie, or add to it where we see her succeed as an older, younger woman. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but then again, the script would have to have something to do with the fact that cheating is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because if she was a little girl cheating in a contest, and like you said, it would have been great if they could have woven that through and had backstory. And there was no mythology. Like, my God, how rich in mythology are so many great, you know, superhero films, and this had none of it. Like, nothing you could sink your teeth into with regards to the history or origin.
And they try to force that in with the what is it, the warrior that with the armor, but that also doesn't seem to match either.
No, yeah, made no sense at all.
And the armor looked terrible, in my opinion. I know it's like the Kingdom Come. But
they used it so horribly too. It's like, okay, you're gonna come back and use this armor to fight Barbara, and then also get beaten down and like use the wings as your defense and then come back. Like, I just think they used it in a really bad way. Yeah.
But for real though, when they did bring it out, I was just like, yeah, that is a classic 80s move. It's like, hey, we got to fit in another action.
Jay's reasoning is really, especially when you talk about the geopolitics, of this movie, is reminding me of Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, when he basically collects all the nuclear weapons, and it's like, and it's considered one of the worst superhero movies of all time. That's so funny, because the armor and stuff, again, Reyna, that's perfect point. Like, she needs to put on armor to take on the cheetah? Like, really? Yeah. Like, this is Wonder Woman. Like, you know what I mean?
And also, when did she stop and get the armor, right? Like, she's on her way to Barbara, and I was like, did you just do a quick side stop at your house to get that? Like, when did you do that?
She could have used it earlier when she was losing her powers, but by then she had already renounced the wish and, like, didn't need the armor.
And she needs the armor to fight Barbara?
Yeah.
Really?
Exactly.
Oh, and the learning to fly, the catching the wind monologue, all of those dialogues, they were making me really upset.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, like, the moment that they're in that plane, first of all, they just walk into the hangar, which, okay, I guess Wonder Woman has had this clearance. I don't know. And they can just get into a jet plane and they can make it invisible. Fine.
Christian, this is where you're drawing your line. The invisible.
I'm not drawing my line in the invisible plane.
The invisible plane was like, this is the first time anyone made sense of why Wonder Woman has a goddamn invisible plane. There's actually a linkage here. This is great.
But when Steve Trevor in the plane starts to talk to him about, like, that's your special ability that you can fly and you embrace it and you love it. And I love the imagination of, or the feeling of, you know, the strength that you must. I was like, she's going to fly. She's going to fly. By the end of the movie, she's going to be flying. And sure enough, she figures out a way to fly, which is fine because that's one of Wonder Woman's powers eventually. To Emily's point, that sequence goes on way too long. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I say that I like the can you read my mind sequence more than I like the flying sequence, and that says a lot, and I love that first Superman movie is like my favorite movie of all time, and I buy into that can you read my mind. But this sequence when she flies, it was just so telegraphed. I was just like, she's gonna fly, let's get to it. Like, when are we gonna see that? And then we did, and I was like, okay, done, you know. I don't know. She doesn't need the invisible plane because she can fly now.
Right. I know. There's definitely a part of it where no one sort of thought through any kind of choices. Like, that's the other thing about, it's suddenly the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. And then is it July? And, like, it's not like someone pointed out, like, in the next scene, Barbara's wearing a winter coat in Washington, D.C. in July. Like, okay.
they told the homeless dude, she told the homeless dude, stay warm. It's like, it's July in D.C.
Yeah.
There's no other choice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. I didn't even think about that. I was so mired in all the other stuff. You know, the thing of it is, you know, I have to say that when I when it first became obvious what the sort of the thing that was going to propel the story was going to be a wish stone, I was just like, yeah. Oh God, oh, yeah. don't. And they did it. And I was just like, well, then what's to stop anything from happening in this movie? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anybody who makes a wish, anybody, and you only get one wish. And again, going back to seeing the repercussions of your wish, the only person that gets that is Maxwell Lord. And he seems to be okay with, you know, his blood red eyes and, you know, feeling really bad. And, you know, I'm just like, okay. And
you know how they say that nothing would be different if like in the Indiana Jones movie, like it would have had the same outcome if he got involved or not.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the same thing, because either way, his kid would have been in trouble. And he would have undone it anyway,
yeah,
no matter what they did.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same, similar problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, and personally, as, you know, a part Latinx person, there's a part of me that's like, are we really going to make the Donald Trump stand in a Latin guy? Like, I'm like, come on, man. Like, that bugged the hell out of me. I was just like, oh, God. And he's got the dyed blonde hair and all that just bugged the hell out of me. I was just like, why like there's just, I mean, I appreciate that we want a Latin actor in movies, but do we have to make him the Donald Trump stand-in? like it's just like, and I feel like they did that to sort of like maybe pull you away from the idea that he is Donald Trump, but he's Donald Trump. Like, I know that, yep. Gal Gadot has said, like, he's Godot has said that he's not, but he is. He 100% is.
You're actually right with Godot.
Godot. Oh, okay. Yep. Oops.
It's actually Godot.
Yeah. Gotcha. Godot.
I
connected the Godots.
I turned her name French for years.
Yeah, as did I. Yeah, no, and the biggest part of this movie for me is just that it really is the Maxwell Lord movie. I feel like, mm-hmm. there's a huge, yeah. chunk, mm-hmm. of this movie is that him running around, trying to make deals, mm-hmm. And then the biggest part of the problem that I have with the villain is, and I have this issue with a lot of movies, is that when the villain is doing something wrong in the movie, we are not meant to empathize with the villain. So this villain, in towards the beginning or middle, or I lost track of the time because it's such a long movie, he is cheating people out of money, and mm-hmm. he is ripping people off, and he is doing dirty business deals. But when it is happening, they make you empathize and feel bad with him. And it's just like, no. He's doing bad things. Like, I feel like that they combine the scenes in which he is doing the bad things with the scenes where you should be empathizing with him. And that's just a bad mix, in my opinion, because I'm like, I don't, you know, he's talking to this guy, and then his kid is coming into the office, and he's trying to balance everything, and his world is falling apart, and they make you feel bad for him. But I don't feel like I should feel bad for this character, because he's ripping people off. Now, if he was trying to be like Robin Hood-ish or something like that, or there was like a little twist to his character that maybe put some good in it, but there's no good in it, in my opinion, except for the fact that he wants to save his own ass and look good in front of his son. Am I going anywhere with this?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, but there's also, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
There's also like a kind of a forgiveness element. Like at the end, remember what his kid says to him? Like, yeah. I love you because you're my dad.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's that whole redemption forgiveness piece that they threw in there oddly. But I agree with you overall, Christian. Like, this was not a Diana Prince film at, yeah. all. I agree with you.
No,
100%. What I was going to say is, like, maybe there's like the portrayal of, like, they wanted you to kind of like see, and I'm reaching here, like, that people do feel like a sense of empathy for, like, these big rich Trump like people, which is why they vote for them.
Maybe.
I don't think they're that smart to even.
I honestly think you're right. I think they were just trying to make us feel empathy for the guy. And like, I think, again, I don't know. I just feel like I just feel like everyone's heart's in the right place. And I agree with you, like, that it's not that Wonder Woman is not the driving sort of force. And I think it's also just I think they moved the emotional turn, like, to agree with kind of what everyone said. Like, the emotional turn in this movie is her letting Steve go. And that should be tied more clearly to the lesson of you don't cheat to get what you want. Because that's the fundamental sort of thing here, is that doing the thing is cheating. And she had to realize that. And then putting that so far away from the end, so you kind of forget that it even happened. And then also just the writing isn't great. And
her motivation was love, though, for wanting him. It's not cheating to want someone who died back. Like, I don't think that's cheating.
It's not the cheating. It's not the motivation. Like, that's like, I honestly do believe it's a good lesson. That, like, well, she wanted Steve back and she cheated to get him back.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like,
this is about. Go ahead, Jay.
It's about the thing that you're. It's not about the want in and of itself. It's not that, oh, I love someone, but like, and another thing that they do that undercuts it is that she's unaware when she does it. It's like an accident, as opposed to, I see what you're saying, as opposed to like the affirmative choice of, like, if Maxwell Lord had offered her Steve back and she took it, you know, as opposed to just, oh, I wish I had my boyfriend back. And now I do. And, you know, so
but
I feel like that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
And then they didn't get there.
But it is cheating when Steve inhabits another guy's body.
Yeah.
And you sleep with him. And it's kind of that's like sexual. I don't know. Is that rape? I don't know.
It is.
If we had done this with the female character, Twitter would have been exploding right now.
Man, what are the fucking rules for this gemstone, man?
There are no rules.
And why did he have to come back in a different body?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like,
couldn't he have just terminated it and showed up in a fucking bubble somewhere?
Yeah.
Naked.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. 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 That is the moment that I had. I'm so thick and dumb. Maybe I was just tired while I was watching the movie by the end of it. But I was just like, because Evis had said, like, oh, people are bringing up rape. And I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, I don't recall that. And then I went to sleep and, you know, that moment of clarity, like, right before, I was like, oh. It's just like, oh, okay.
This is a relatively recent, this is like the first time this conversation, I think, has hit the kind of like mainstream. It's been bubbling in some genre and in some writer circles for a while. Like, I have a friend who worked on Once Upon a Time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And like, Once Upon a Time did this like every season.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Someone like pretended to be someone else. I mean, Shakespeare does it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's only in the last like couple of years that people are like, hey, that's not cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone's sleeping with some, what is it? You know, it's the Revenge of the Nerds thing. It's,
yeah.
You know,
oh, absolutely.
Like, it's all of those things that we have just now recently been like, oh, pretending to be someone you're not or inhabiting the body of someone that's not yours, that's not actually consent.
Sure. And so, but Jay, this was not written in, I mean, maybe it's still trying to capture that 80s aesthetic of Revenge of the Nerds date rape, but like, honestly, like, this was written in the past like 3 years.
I know.
Like,
yeah. I know.
They should have known better. Maybe it is a way of, you know, because in the past, it's maybe usually been female characters that this sort of thing has happened in movies, and maybe it is a way of turning it around on men. Okay, fine. But, you know, two wrongs doesn't make a right. Like, you know, and I know that there's a lot of dudes where it was like, well, wait a minute, I got to sleep with Gal Gadot, you know, you know, which is gross in and of itself, right? But
what the fuck happened to that dude during the week or whatever that Steve was?
I don't remember.
He just goes away for a week.
Well, he lost his job for sure.
With all this stuff, and then I wake up in my bed. All this stuff. Yeah.
He was just confused.
Where are my parachute pants?
He got to work and they were like, you haven't been here for a week. You're fired.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what happened. Oh my God. And
the
yeah.
script, it's so bad.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, no,
Wouldn't
no.
Would it have made it worse or better if she had gone out with him at the end of the movie?
Oh, the guy. Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's a question.
It would have been worse, right? Too.
Because like when she sees him at the end and we see his real face again, then yes. I was like, wait, was she making out with that face?
Yeah.
Yes.
The whole
yes.
time?
Yeah.
Yes.
But she didn't see that weird. Face. She only saw Steve. Chris Pine.
Yeah.
Did she though?
except when they looked in a mirror. Except when they went past a reflection. That's when he could see himself. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean,
it's a quantum leap thing.
But that's the thing. It's like a reverse quantum leap thing because you understand that anyone else who looks in the mirror when Sam's looking in the mirror sees the person.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. When everyone else sees what Sam sees when he looks in the mirror.
Yeah.
We just see him as Sam.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone else sees her making out with this guy.
Yes,
who
exactly.
is not Steve, right?
Yeah.
And that's still weird. That's still weird.
It's definitely weird. The whole movie's weird. The whole movie's just like one big weird smorgasbord. And it's like, I, you know, the one big thing that I really had a problem with too is the sort of Middle Eastern sort of tank fight sequence where she can like flip a tank, and she can't do that with any of the, like, I mean, we're talking about a character who, at least in comics, has Superman like abilities, and she's trying to do the Indiana Jones like hang. And there is a definite fault in the editing in this, because the sequence in Raiders is so well edited that you know exactly where Indiana Jones is at all times. He's under the truck. He's in front of the truck. He's hanging off. He's got his whip. In that sequence, there were several points where I was like, where's Wonder Woman? Like, which truck mm-hmm. is she under? Is she yeah. under the truck? Is she over the truck? I know that Steve is on top of one of the trucks in his, yep. you know, white t-shirt and all that, like, but at one point they flip a tank, and you know, she's having trouble, like, Wonder Woman would just be throwing these tanks around Man of Steel style, I think, you know, mm-hmm. it wouldn't have been a problem unless she was already losing her powers at that point, mm-hmm. which could have
yeah,
been
yeah I think she was losing her powers yeah
but at the yeah. same time during that sequence I was like, where is Wonder Woman? Like I was like, wait, which truck is she under? I you know, but And she also managed flipping one of them and somehow surviving. So she's definitely got some of her strength, you know. So, yeah, I just feel like I'm glad that it was kind of like a happy mess for you, Jay. But for me, I was just like, oh, my gosh. I was like, yeah. this is like my kid's not finger painting. They spilled all the finger paints all over the floor, and now I got to clean this shit up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I just went with it. Like, I'm not a big check your brain at the door, whatever
sure,
kind
sure.
of person. Like, you should always like engage. And it's, there were definitely problems that I felt, but I was just like, I don't know. There's something about the spirit that I was like, I see what you're going for. I'm going to give you credit for it. And also, I got to be honest, it's like I can't really tell which of these is more real. The, like, I'm at home, I'm in my pajamas, I'm sitting on my couch, it's a couple of hours, I'm cool.
Yeah.
Versus, I really wonder, like, I wonder if it would have been more popular if you had gone to see it in a theater that was packed with people and you were hearing other people laugh and hearing other people enjoy it, if they did. I don't know. It may have been a terrible experience, but I do wonder if there is something to it not being a communal thing that you share with other people.
Not
you know?
For me. Paul has experience with me in theaters, so. Sorry, Raina, yeah, what were you saying?
I totally think that some of those scenes would have been obviously way more epic and you know, to watch on a big screen.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, no, I think I probably would have enjoyed some of the certainly some of the action scenes would have, like, I think had a better payoff in a theater, but I think overall as a whole I might have been a little more pissed if I'd gone to the theater.
Yeah, I don't yeah. know, like, that's the thing.
Well, and that's the thing though too, is the big screen flaws are bigger on the big screen, and you know, some of that effect stuff, like there's one point where she's like running and I was like, what is this original episode of $6 Million Man running thing that is happening here?
Like, about the scene that was that looked like it was shot in someone's garage on a green screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, it's like she's kind of running in place there. And yeah. The, yeah, yeah, I remember that shot.
I thought that
like
kind of like was like a nod to like OG Wonder Woman a little bit. That's what I saw. Yeah,
maybe. Sure. But I think she ran better on OG Wonder Woman, to tell you the honest truth. They sped up the camera a little. So let's talk about the end credit thing. Something positive, I guess.
Well, before the end credit thing, I just wanted to talk about the fact that how he reaches everybody. And like, I remember afterwards, I was asking Paul, like, but how did he reach the whole fucking world? And he's like, well, there was that whole science explanation thing that they, say the beforehand. Satellite. I was like, okay, clearly nodded out before. Yeah,
there was a brief moment in the Ronald Reagan's office when they when they were explaining how this quantum beam touches everyone, and he was very concerned. He's like, so you're saying it touches them?
That was some exposition. That was some very detailed.
Saying that anything here could be touching.
Which to me is complete bullshit. It's like, okay, so you're going to go on TV and then that's how the wishes work? Really?
You know what would have worked really well is if he had stolen her magic lasso. Like, that is like such a comic book trope. Like, he had used the magic lasso to like tap into the magical energy of, whatever, comic book, and figures something. But that whole thing, actually, Jay, it's really funny because that White House stuff, that was definitely Superman 2 for sure.
I feel like they watched Superman 2, all the people made this, they watched Superman 2 and were like, this is what we're going for, and then we're just like, and no one's gonna care about any of the sort of like, no one's gonna ask the questions that you would ask, that people ask now, that none of us ask when you watch Superman 2.
Yeah,
like,
but
Superman
the thing 2 is,
doesn't make that much more sense than this.
Audiences are much more sophisticated than Superman 2. I mean, my daughter watched Superman 2 with me once when she was younger, and she was like, wait, what? Like, there were a lot of questions. I was like, asking these questions, and I wouldn't have asked those when I was your age,
Where does the cellophane S come from? I don't know.
Exactly.
But look,
I'm not saying audiences aren't more sophisticated. I'm just saying we're not going to treat them like they are.
That is exactly what they were. They were like, okay, they didn't have to worry about it for Superman 2, so we don't have to worry about it for this. Let's just blow past it.
The whole thing gets unraveled. It's like, okay, I can touch you by having everyone watch me on TV. Oh, but look into my eyes. But then there are people making wishes that aren't looking into his eyes.
Yeah.
Like, okay, how does this work?
Yeah.
I need a manual.
It sort of doesn't, I just feel like if you've got a magic stone, use that. Like, or if you've become the magic stone, like, let's make this a little less convoluted. You know what I'm saying?
But let's also just acknowledge that essentially he wished for a million wishes, which is what everyone would do.
Yes. Exactly.
Can somebody explain to me why he even wanted to share his wishes with everybody in the first place?
Well, he gets something out of it, right? Like, anytime he wishes...
He was getting life force.
Yeah, and that's the end of it. Yeah, and that's where they reference the monkey's paw, which probably tons of people have not read. But, that is like one of the... When my daughter started reading Edgar Allan Poe in school, I was like, oh, you got to read The Monkey's Paw. And luckily the teacher did introduce that to them, because I remember The Monkey's Paw being one of the very first things that I read when I was a kid. I don't know how young I was, but just being like, holy shit, that was messed up. Like,
The Monkey's Paw is messed up.
Yeah. And they reference it several times, but to your point, Emily, I don't think they hit the nail on the head enough that somebody has to give something to him. And he says it, like, he says it to it's Bialya, right? The DC fictional, that's a country in DC comics. Right. Bialya, the leader of Bialya, where he says, OK, I'll take all your troops and I'll take all your, I'll take your security forces. And, when they come for you, like, but they don't hit the nail on the head enough that you have to give something up, And yeah, I think that's one of the things the script could have done much better. And quite honestly, to give Maxwell Lord more of a redemptive arc, I mean, it does escalate to like worldwide nuclear warfare. But to me, it would have been much more of a personal thing if it had been his son that was going to die or something happened to, and he gives up everything for that. Like, and then you would be like, oh, he gave it up all for his son, and in a way he does, because the whole world's going to get nuked. And I guess he doesn't care about anybody else getting nuked but his son, which is more messed up than anything. And Donald Trump, as Donald Trump as you're going to get. But, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm
examining it.
Made
me think of something else, too. So I was confused in this sense that, like, I thought either A, everyone had to give up their wish, or B, the stone had to be destroyed. So couldn't she have just killed Maxwell Lord and problem solved?
Yes.
I think so, but she doesn't kill people, so there's a problem.
This was not directed by Zack Snyder, so
produced though, his name was all over the front of it. That's when I knew he was in trouble. Well, he's in the first one too. He's a producer of the first one. I think everything DC now is produced by him. I movies anyway.
Not to beat a dead horse or anything, but
do it.
Say it again.
But when, you know, he's offering the wish, I get the whole you have to give me something, I give you something part, because that was happening in person and it was taking so long and it was driving him bananas in the office.
Yeah.
But and that's why he wanted to take it to the airwaves or whatever the technology called for. But it just didn't add up, the part about taking back from people that you can't actually see and you're not even aware of what the hell they're wishing for.
Yeah.
It was just. There was a disconnect for me. Like, millions of people you're going to take stuff from, you don't even know what they have.
Yeah.
At this point, he's a magical devil stone. So.
Right. Yeah.
Well, he's Mr. Mixiel Pitalik.
Yeah.
Mixius Pitalik. Yeah. He's basically that.
It didn't make enough sense. It just didn't.
Yeah.
It
did. What's interesting to me is how the Barbara Minerva character, once they confront her with the, you're losing your soul, your empathy, you know, you're losing the thing that made you special in the beginning, that she's like, all right, like, there's none of that. Just like, there was none on her part. Like, oh, you're right. There was barely any of that. Maybe there's like a beat for a second, but she's like, yeah, I'm fine with that. You know, which is how I feel like a lot of people are.
Power here, guys. We just had a flicker.
Oh, did you? Oh, all right. Well, we should wrap this up. Anyway, because we're coming up on an hour, but let's try and just talk about the end credit sequence. How pleasantly surprised or unpleasantly surprised were you? I was pleasantly surprised and was like, I wish you'd have been in the rest of the whole movie there.
It's not real. Like, I actually left because I had to pee. I was actually going to, like 20 minutes left or so, I was just like, all right, I think we're almost done. I can wait.
Yeah.
Because originally we were going to watch it in two halves and that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And as soon as the credits rolled, I was like, all right, pew, bathroom. And Paul's like, it's not over, come back. Damn it.
Oh, man.
But yeah, that was the one part where I was like, ooh, Lyndon Carter came back. That's so cool. And then. And I think they needed it.
I actually missed it.
Oh, did you?
Because what happened was, you know, the movie ended, and then my Roku, like the app, puts up the, like, here's the thing you're about to start watching immediately.
And
I was like, oh, let me hit the back button to get rid of it, but it took me like back to the main screen. Then I was like, well, let me see if it'll just restart the movie where I left off, and then it restarted the movie at the beginning. And at that point, I was like, I'm not fast forwarding through this whole fucking movie just to see an end credit sequence. I'm fine.
Well, and now is my oh, go ahead.
You.
No, I was going to say now is my opportunity to once again slam HBO Max because your Roku app sucks to the max in 80s vernacular. I mean, it is what was the word that Emily used earlier? It is janky as hell. Like, I am like, holy cow, is this app janky? You guys need to get your, because when I go to Netflix, when I go to Disney Plus, I don't have any problems. I go to, you know, anything else, but HBO Max continues to kick me out in the middle of stuff, continues to freeze up. The navigation is slow. All right, there. I said it. So there you go. But love Linda Carter. Mm. I will say that. Linda Carter forever. The show that made me actually like girls, made me realize that I liked girls. I was like, oh, I think I like girls.
I love this idea, too, of like using this technology to extend actors' careers.
Well, sure. But what did they do to her? Did they do anything to her? Or I thought it was her. Like, it's really her.
I mean, it's her. But I mean, there's definitely some digital de-aging.
Yeah.
On and obviously a stunt person for like at least part of the shot. You
sure.
Know?
Sure.
You know, because I don't think Linda Carter caught a pilot.
No, I don't think she did either. That's a good point.
But, But yeah, I dig this idea of like, hey, yeah, not like you can have these actors who can now be in like bigger properties / more action properties and things like that, you know, in a time where like, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be safe to shoot some of these with older actors now, yeah. But you know, if you digitally, you know, mess with things like now you can have like, yeah, I actually enjoy that. The end credit sequence was my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
After the first, I did love the opening on the island. That's
I loved the mall sequence.
I wanted to make a movie and just set the whole damn thing on the island.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would watch happily.
I actually really loved the mall sequence. I really thought that was fun. I liked that. But it's funny because we're sort of living in the era of deep fakes, and how long is it going to be before studios can realize, well, people love Linda Carter, people love Gal Gadot, you know, whatever, let's just put her face on another actress and just keep those movies going, because that technology is going to get more and more sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, it's kind of ghoulish in a way, but that's where they're going, right? I mean, if you could put like Linda Carter on the face of another actress or CGI and it looks convincing, you know, more than the running in the Middle East sequence in this movie, to me, I'm like, that's where they're going to go, you know, because they're going to put Christopher Reeve's face on somebody else's body. You know, I mean, I think that that's the temptation that they're going
never
to face.
Never recast again.
Yeah, exactly. Never. Christopher Reeve will be Superman until forever and ever and ever. And Maxwell Lord succeeds in blowing up the whole planet, which he did not in this movie.
I loved seeing Linda Carter at the end. It was a treat.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I love her. Love her. I think she's wonderful. I've always loved her. But any final thoughts on Wonder Woman 1984? No. I think we've said all we're going to say. I think we've all said anything that's important. Most of us did not like it except for Jay, but Jay, you have convinced me on what they were doing. And if I ever watch it again, which I may not, maybe segments of it, I will take that into account. But Superman 3 is still the bad Superman movie. And this is still the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name, as always, is Christian Horn. I have had my good friends, Emily Convert, now that I've got the pronunciation correct, Jay Holtham, Reina Velarde, and Paul Edwards on the line. Thank you for joining me. And this is the last episode of 2020. As crappy as the year has been, I think we've done a good job doing podcasts. So I just want to thank you four, especially, and anyone else who's ever been on this podcast, a guest, a co-host, for joining me, and hopefully we will have much better days in 2021 ahead. Thank you as always for listening, and follow us on social media. And if you ever want to reach out, the email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Bye. Happy New Year.
Bye. Happy New Year.
Bye.
Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.